Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And I think you're gonna tell me that I didn't deal with a couple of things that I was supposed to deal with.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about, you know, how do you handle weather issues? You know, how do you really plan for this party?
Pray.
And and other than that?
Well, the other thing, I mean, there's the question is not just how do you have a nice something, sort of a lawn party, but really, what is the party that you're having? That's the question that I did not deal with, like a skirting political candidate. I think you're referencing, right? So I wasn't not trying to deal with it. I was just being forgetful. My apologies. So what is the party that you're having? Let's say you're having a more formal event. You're having a small birthday party, but you want to have seating. And you want to have a weather guarantee of sorts. And so maybe you're renting tents, and maybe you're stringing all kinds of lights up in the tents, and maybe there are all kinds of branches up there with the lights, so you still feel like you're under the trees, but you're protected from any of the bad things that Mother Nature might throw at you during your outdoor event.
What about other decorating? Any ideas for that?
I think the thing is that people, they think about, like, decorating a table. When you're outside, it really is kind of like, how are you coming into the space? Is there a staircase that you're, like at my house, you're walking down a staircase. What do you see when you're walking down that staircase that's right in front of you? You know, how is the path laid out for you to get to where you're going? I think one of the nice things for a host is to think about taking people from parking on the street to actually a whole entirely different place. And I think there's an opportunity in changing someone's approach or attitude towards coming to the event that you're having.
Setting the scene.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe it's the little torches along the way. Please don't burn the neighborhood down. Or maybe or maybe it's the strings of lights, and it's as simple as, for, you know, that your 2-year-old's birthday party, it's as simple as balloons.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be more than that, and having a little bit of fun with that is only going to make your guests kind of lighten their spirits before they even come into the event. And I think that's something that decorating the table, fun, easy, there's a million ways to do it. I think that people often, let's say you're having that party under the tent where you have 6 different tables, they're big round tables, and you have groups of people, and maybe you have not place settings for everybody, but you want to decorate the tables. The one thing I'd say is, if you want people to talk to each other, if you decorate in the center of the table with something that's great big, that goes high, it may look great in a photograph with no people in it, but you won't take a photograph of people talking to each other in it because their eyesight back and forth is blocked.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do something that's relatively low. I think that's something that, and if you're doing a tent, I'd always say that the something you do on the table and there's something you do up in the tent, they should connect somehow.
Sure.
So that you really have, if you manage to do something where the up in the tent, the tent post, and what's on the tabletop all connect in concept, then you really have created a little space, a little environment just out of the air with that, mm-hmm, with that tent.
I think one of the other things is, if your guests are bringing food, how do you plan? You know, I think people have to think about, how do I plan for that? Do you tell them, you know, do you kind of make a list and say, hey, you know, Alice, will you bring this? And John, will you bring this? And fill in the gaps. And how do you deal with the fact that they walk in the door with something that needs to be heated and you already have your oven full of food? And I think you have to really be organized when people are bringing food.
If you're going to let it be a wild card,
then
God bless you.
Yeah, that's tough. I think you really have to say, hey, this is your category. You're bringing dessert.
So give me an idea. I know I need 2 people to bring fruit desserts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, give me an idea what you think about you doing so I can make sure we have a really nicely coordinated menu set up.
I agree.
But I want you to do something that you're good at, that you're excited about.
That you want to do. Sure. That's what I say to my guests.
But do you want to do a pastry? Do you want to do something as a snack? Do you want to just, you know, and that's...
Right. And then you just sort of fill in the categories with everybody, basically.
If it's part of that first scenario, when people are showing up and someone's bringing something that's meant to be a snack or an antipasti or something,
mm-hmm,
don't let that be the person that always shows up 30 minutes late for every party.
Right. Well, and also as a guest, I think you need to be thoughtful about what you bring. I mean, I think it's a little bit on the guest to think, okay, I know my friend, she only has, or he only has, you know, one oven, and I really don't want to put them in a situation where they have to take this out of what I'm bringing and put it in one of their own dishes. You know, kind of bring it ready to, not kind of, bring it ready to go. Maybe bring your own, you know, maybe put it on something that's disposable, so then the host doesn't have to deal with washing your thing and getting it back to you at the end. And also bringing, you know, disposable silverware or service pieces, you know, so that, or something, you know, it's not a big deal for you to walk over, wash your own service pieces and put them in your bag and go home. And then the other thing is wine. You know, what if people are in charge of bringing wine and, you know,
I think you deal with that the same way that you deal with food.
The food, right. You know, this is your category.
That's
you're responsible for this, and thank you so much. You're awesome for bringing
something. You
want
to bring
something.
Wine? That's awesome. Do you want to bring champagne or some kind of a light red that's going
to
be great?
And it's already got to be at the temperature, right. It's got to be at the temperature that it needs to be served at, too.
Well, the other thing is don't be silly and expect your refrigerator to get everything done. I mean,
right,
that's
scary.
What do a couple of decent-sized coolers cost?
That's what you need outside.
I know that for me doing things at home, I have any number of square or rectangular boxes that I'll put prepared foods in, mm-hmm. that I have ready to go, or backups for things on a table, and they go on a cooler. And literally, you can put that cooler, like if you have a tablecloth on that table,
yeah, that's good.
You literally just tuck the cooler underneath there.
I like that, yes.
And if you want to restock things on your buffet, you go.
And it's even cooler if the cooler is on wheels, because you can just roll it out of there.
You roll it right out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I have one that has a sliding top, so you slide open the top.
Ooh, that's cool. Oh, I like that.
Slide open the top, and it's like a shelf. Mm-hmm. And you pull the ones out that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And
when I think the other thing is to just have big tubs or whatever it is, wash tubs or coolers, or like in the restaurant business, of course, we end up bringing Lexans full of ice. And that way, if somebody brings a couple of, you know, sixes of beer or whatever, they can pop it right into the ice there. Or if you're serving beer, the guests can help themselves.
Well, that's the thing.
Have the bottle opener right there.
Mm-hmm. Make it easy for them to be successful.
Exactly.
If your guests are going to show up with, if you know that someone's going to show up with beer, they have to have a landing place for it.
Yes.
If someone's going to show up with a blueberry crisp, they have to have a landing place for it. And if they know that they're bringing something they really wish they could heat up, you've got to figure out how in your plan to carve 10 minutes out of oven time.
Right.
At the end of things.
But if you know ahead of time, then you'll be fine with it.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I know your grandmother used to do this, and I don't know, maybe everybody does this, and this isn't exactly words of wisdom, but if you do know that people are bringing things and you have your table laid out for where you're, just put a little piece
post-its,
of paper.
Baby.
Yeah, post-its down with, you know, Joan casserole or whatever on it. And that way Joan walks in and she puts her casserole right there.
I think that is super.
I mean, your grandmother did that. That's so smart. And she also would put it in service pieces. So she had all of her service pieces figured out ahead of time.
The service piece for it, the plates you're going to plate it on. I mean, whatever it might be. It's funny. I just literally just did this for a charity dinner, you know, with hundreds of pieces of china at my house, hundreds of pieces of china and big service pieces. And it makes it easy. You review everything once, and there's still tags on everything.
Yes.
And so then the front of the house, you know, the service staff
know
what's
going on.
Somebody
that's helping you knows what to do.
You know, there are five people working in my house that have never been in my house that don't know what any of this stuff is called.
Mm-hmm.
They know that right now is the fish plate. That's perfect. That's all they need to know.
Well, and that's the other thing you have to consider. Do you need help? You know, maybe you can't have help, but if you can, you know, really guiding, you know, having the service team come in and really educating them, telling them, you know, what is what and what you expect of them, and making them successful will make your party go much better.
Well, I talked about just literally taking a piece of paper and figuring out those scenarios. I mean, it's always a timeline for me. You take the first 45 minutes, I want Luke and all his pals for his birthday party. I want them to come in, and I want them to drink beer and eat these four snacks and play lawn cricket or something, you know, and hopefully nobody goes to the hospital.
Gosh.
Okay. After that 45-minute period, we're going to move into the tent that we have decorated with all the different clown faces and all the, you know, whatever Luke wants for his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we do all the grilled things that go with that, and they come to the buffet line and they see the grill master and they move on. And
yeah, perfect.
You know, and then at dessert time, we're actually going to go in the house for dessert, and we're going to have cake, and that's laid out on the table, and that's already laid out with all the plates and all that kind of business. And the reality is that at some point they're going to be in your house anyway. Make sure that you know that. It also may have torrential rain right in the middle of the event. You know, that's the other thing you have to think about.
Yes.
I don't want to be silly, but mark where your restroom is.
Yes. That's, yeah, guests are uncomfortable.
Make it easy.
Where is it? Right. No, I think that's...
They shouldn't be asking the grill master. Where's the potty?
What about, I know you like to make sangria. I think that is a great drink for a lot of people.
That's an easy one. I mean, that's with the cooler idea, you literally can just have one pitcher after another lined up of all the garnishes and the bottle of wine that finishes that sangria cold and ready to go. You pull those garnishes out of the ice, pull the wine out, you add the wine to it, you have the pitcher, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
That honestly, if you're doing a casual something and you want to not do wine and keep it or make it very cost-effective wine and just fun, you could be doing, you could be doing each one of those tables that you have set up, a pitcher of sangria goes down on each one of those tables. And that's if you have all the garnishes ready to go and all the different pitchers. And it's not like you don't have to have, crazy antique ceramic, pitchers from the south of Spain to put sangria in. It can be very straightforward glass pieces that you can see all the fruit and all that kind of business anyway. But that's a great choice.
Now that we know how to serve sangria, how about a recipe, Tony?
I was waiting for you to say rexcopy. that's when you but to ask for one drink recipe too many.
Yes, exactly.
I think the concept on sangria is very straightforward. I think a lot of times people get confused and think that they've got all kinds of syrups and all kinds of crazy stuff, and you need to make a potion essentially with booze and fruit. And a very classical way to do that would be, say, brandy, nice brandy, Spanish brandy, California brandy, simple French brandy, not something that's aged a tremendously long time. You don't want the woodsy flavor. But that's a good thing to have in there. Cointreau is nice to have in there. Triple sec, also known as Cointreau on a budget, is reasonable to have in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's any number of things. You could. I wouldn't maybe use tequila. I wouldn't use some spirit that's been aged a really long time in wood. Things that have a really, really big outlier flavor that's going to be sort of confusing with wine and fruit, because that's what you... The three things you're going to do are make the potion, have fruit garnishes ready to go to finish it with, and have the wine that you're going to serve it with. The wine that you're going to pour into all that business is honestly the most important thing. You want it to connect to whatever the fruit is. If it's fruit that's in the season, let's say it's right now, and it's sweet cherries and blueberries.
That would be so
pretty
good.
Fun season.
Yeah, that would be great.
Maybe it's in a couple of weeks, and it's white peaches and the first apricots.
That would be really
so let's,
good.
Let's say it's that. So it's white peaches and the first apricots.
Mm-hmm.
So the potion that you make needs to connect with that and the wine that you're going to serve with. For me, inexpensive sparkling wine that's really good, maybe Cava or Conca would be great to use there. Sparkling wine from Vouvray. I like to use sparkling wine from Vouvray for this kind of thing, honestly, because Chenin Blanc has acidity that's really strong and citrusy. And if you don't have fruit that has a lot of acidity, it's nice to have that. You can always fortify those apricots and peaches and the white peaches with a little bit of, lemon and their peel. The peel gives a little bit of perfume, too, in the oil. What you don't want is a whole lot of the pith and all that sort of business in there. Use the fillets from the lemon and go ahead and add those to your fruit business and add some of the peel that you use. Just use the peeler to take off, but the white pith that's just going to make things bitter and discolor in the drink glasses. So there's your fruit business. You're going to honestly build your glasses with those. So you have 40 people coming, you need to have enough fruit ready to go for 40 people to build those
that's
in the glasses, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need probably, your potion needs to be about 20% of the volume of it. So if you're building your glasses with fruit and ice, then, what do you need for 40 people for that? It's you literally sit down with a calculator and figure it out. My guess is you'll probably need about a liter and a quarter, something like that, of your potion. So whatever the alcohol it is, that the fruit that you're going to use and the alcohol that you've chosen, those are the things that you want to mix and macerate. And that's usually like an overnight thing. And you may season that. Maybe you're seasoning that with a cinnamon stick. Maybe you're seasoning that with... fresh rosemary or lavender.
That would be great.
Maybe you're doing it with tropical fruit in the wintertime and you're using a wine that's a little bit sweeter like a Riesling or a Pinot Gris You could be using lots of citrus and pineapple and cilantro. And cilantro I wouldn't do the day before. I would do that just to finish. But something to make it refreshing.
Cilantro is a more delicate herb. So
exactly.
Do it, yeah.
And those are the things. Your potion is something that you're going to strain off the potion into the glasses. So there's your glass. It has the ice. It has the fruit. Then the potion is sort of strained on top of that business and trickles to the bottom. And then you add your cava. You know, and then I would literally pour the cava so it sparkled for the guest when they're getting it, you know?
Yeah, I like the idea of having the cava in there.
And that's fun and refreshing and ends up being
really refreshing.
Probably a little stronger. It's probably as strong as fortified wine, so the ice is important. If you're serving 6 ounces of this, where two-thirds of it is wine and one-third of it is stronger spirit.
Yeah, I've heard that can catch up with you pretty quickly because it's so good.
You're essentially having the alcohol of 9 or 10 ounces of wine.
Yeah. So
in the glass,
be careful drinking
you're thinking it's fruity and it's nice and easy, and then you're going to be asking for recipes. So, but that's the basic method of making sangria, and the recipe can be something that you adapt based on the fruit that's in the season or what you're excited to find. And the wine that you're going to use.
Please wash the fruit before you put it in anything.
Oh,
and
goodness,
the herbs.
Yes.
I mean, please, wash. Wash and drain.
And dry.
And
unless
pit.
Unless you want to add water to
obviously,
that.
You're not putting those cherries in there with the pits in. That would be a bad surprise
that'd be
for
pretty
your guests.
Good surprise for your
guests. Yeah, you're going to have to pit those.
The other thing I would say is that you can use almost any kind of, the fruitier and younger the red wine is, the better it's going to be in that kind of situation.
Do you have a specific suggestion for that, or? I feel like I used Levier Ferrum when I did my sangria a couple of years ago.
Mostly Grenache and Syrah, and that's
okay.
An easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Tempranillo is a really good one because even if your fruit doesn't have a lot of acid, Tempranillo, especially a young one, will. And if you get it where it's not a lot of, it will have some natural tannin, but not too much. The tan and the sort of chalky business, you don't want too much of that, I don't believe, in this kind of an application. Monastrell is a very good grape. To do that with. That's Monastrell is Spanish for Mourvèdre,
okay.
The French version. But they're mostly you're going to find Monastrell from Jumilla and kind of like southeast of Spain. And a pretty big, ripe, bold, happy fruit, dark color. Primitivo from the south of Italy, one of the relatives of Zinfandel, will do well. Zinfandel.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's like young, fruity versions of those kinds of things. And if it's whites, again, I don't think I want anything with a whole lot of wood. Some big oaky Chardonnay doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So it's something that's pretty fresh.
Okay.
Is what you're after.
And then we need some backyard wine suggestions.
Yeah.
Top five backyard wines by Tony Corman. Top five.
I think you need bubbles. You need white. You need rosé. You need a lighter red. You need a bigger red.
Okay.
Right?
Good categories.
And you probably don't need to spend a fortune. So I'm not going to give you one. If I give you one specific producer's X, it probably is going to be gone, or the vintage will have changed, or whatever. And I will have given you misinformation, but I can give you a concept. In the sparkling, I think that you want some. That sparkling Vouvray can be a very good category. Conca, as opposed to Cava, qualitatively is a very good category. Those are for sparkling. That's kind of inexpensive. I would look for that. There's also a sparkling that's a little bit sweet that's probably really popular for a broad audience from France called Clairette de Die. And there are only a few imported into the U.S. that are quite good. In whites, Middle European varietals, I love in that kind of situation. Silvaner, Grunewald Liener, Riesling, if you want something a little sweet. Kerner, K-E-R-N-E-R, that's a little bit fruitier than some of the others. Some of these things from the Alto Adige in Italy or Austria, Alsace, the Müller-Thurgau, another grape. These alcohols not so high. They're very good, very cold, very clean, long on the palate, and deal with salt well. And no wood in really any of those things. Fruity red, Primitivo, like I said. Primitivo cold, really fun. Young Sangiovese, like a Rosa de Montalcino, or, very, very, very fun in that kind of situation. Bigger red, I wouldn't go bigger than a Chianti Classico. 2011 is a good year in Chianti Classico as well, by the way. And that's a lot of what's out and around the market. And those, price-wise, they're not crazy. You don't need a single crew. And that's very, very good grilled meat wine.
And we probably should mention an Argentine wine since we were speaking to Marcelo.
The sleeper in Argentina, because the world has overpopularized Malbec, so the average quality of Malbec has kind of gone down because it's everywhere at the moment. A grape from Lombardia that went to Argentina with a lot of Italian immigrants was Bonarda. And Bonarda is a medium weight red, pretty punchy, a little bit like Dolcetto from the north, the west of Italy. Bonarda, if you can find it, or Bonarda blended with Malbec or sometimes blended with Cabernet, super tasty, price is reasonable, nice, a little bit cool, really nice for backyard stuff.
Any producers you can suggest? Because Argentines, I mean, I know you weren't going to be specific, but with Argentina, it might be helpful.
They're not that, the Bonarda is pretty much only old vines and old school producers, you know? So okay. I think that's, I think you're pretty safe. Just look for that varietal.
That would be fun to check out.
That would be fun to drink.
And that. Yes, all of it. I want to grill like Marcelo right now.
When we come back in our next segment on Former Wolf on Food and Wine, we're speaking to Marcelo Vasquez, a mentor of Cindy's and a native Argentine who is going to give us a lot of outdoor cooking tips, Argentine style.